He looks determined without being ruthless. Something heroic in his manner. There's a courage about him. Doesn't look like a killer. Comes across so calm. Acts like he has a dream. Full of passion.
You don't trust me, huh?
Well, you know why.
I do. We're not supposed to trust anyone in our profession anyway.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Asian Cinema Fusion. I am your host, Paul Martinez, and we're here doing what we do. We're talking Asian cinema. Five films on tap for you today for us to discuss, and we're going to get right into it. And with the first one, Shin Godzilla, also known as Godzilla Resurgence, from Japan, of course, 2016, the latest Godzilla film. It's been a while since our last one, and they're restarting the series apparently. And this one was directed by Hideaki Anno and Shinji Higuchi, who are responsible for the Attack on Titan films, also the Neon Genesis Evangelion for the anime fans out there. I'm sure you're very familiar with that very popular series. The film is starring Hiroki Hasegawa, who plays Rando Laguchi. He was also in Attack on Titan and in the film Why Don't You Play in Hell. And Satomi Ishihari as Kayoko Ann Patterson, who you may know if you've seen Sadako 3D or the great film Monsters. So, tagline for this film is, Japan is falling again. What's this about? So, this is, you know, as I'm saying, the third reboot of the Godzilla franchise. And this one shows the metamorphosis of the Big G to his final incarnation we all are familiar with, which is a little different. Now, very few times do I get giddy about an upcoming film release. But this was one of those times. Very excited to see I consider him my friend, my good friend of many years, Godzilla, back on the big screen. Imagine then my sadness when I actually viewed what is, in my opinion, one of the worst entries of the franchise. I give this review with a heavy heart. In fact, I saw the film twice, hoping a second viewing would soften my stance. It didn't. In fact, the second viewing pretty much cemented my thoughts on this film. This was not a G film. It was a disaster film talking about how Japanese government react to tragedy and how the world around them factor in. In fact, they didn't really need Godzilla to tell this story. It could have been an earthquake, an alien invasion, meteor striking. Godzilla really felt more like a prop to tell a different narrative. And while that can be acceptable in some ways, it won't be for fans of the star of this film. Some of the most comically overdrawn out scenes of politicians ever committed to film is what you saw here. Yes, I understand that in many ways a parody of how government works is what they were going for. You know, like having meetings, to schedule meetings. It could almost be funny if it wasn't so insanely trivial and, dare I say, boring. The cast of characters that the audience is subjected to is quite absurd, and I have yet to find someone who saw it who could tell me any of the characters' titles, despite that every time a new character showed up, his title was printed right on the screen in front of you. But it was, I can't even explain this correctly. It was just like you were being overwrought with useless information that you didn't care. And the entire time you're sitting there thinking, where the is Godzilla? This thing was just a mess. And to top this off, you know, for Godzilla fans, the Big G falls asleep Yes, he falls asleep in the film for about 20 minutes. Now, my guess is he saw the screener of this film, which is why I put him out. Because believe me, I had a hard time keeping my eyes awake. Now, it wasn't all bad. The scenes where we actually get to see a fully grown Godzilla lay waste to Japan was excellent. His powers have been augmented and seem much more destructive than ever before. But this was about 10, maybe 15 minutes of the film. Add to that maybe the final 10 minutes, and that's all that I deem worthy of sitting through. I don't know if this will be the theme going forth. I have heard the film is being well received in Japan. So maybe they feel they're onto something here, but I truly hope not. This is not the Godzilla I know. It's not the one I care about. He had no personality. All he did was walk around and crush stuff. And I know, the people who are not fans of Godzilla and don't understand the inner workings of a Godzilla film may say, well, that's what Godzilla does, isn't it? Just walks around the city and smashes things. And I would say to you, you're not a true Godzilla fan, because any true fan of Godzilla knows Godzilla is much more than that. There's a lot of social themes being brought forth, and Godzilla himself is a character who does have a personality. Sometimes some films don't display it as well as others, but it's there. It's been there in over 50 films, so I'm not crazy. And I know there are many fans of his that agree with me. This was just, I don't even know what to say. It just was mind-boggling in its absurdity of just blandness. I'm having a struggle finding words, and that's not good since my job is to talk to you guys about a film. But I'm having true struggle in explaining what I saw. I cannot, in good faith, recommend this to anyone. I give it a 3 out of 10. And let's hope the Gamera relaunch is as good as the trailers suggest. Because if you've seen the trailers for the new Gamera film, whew, that looks like that's going to be a lot of fun. This, I just don't know what happened here. I'm literally at a loss of words here. Godzilla Resurgence, or Shin Godzilla, however you want to title it, is a film almost that maybe I think fans, if you haven't seen it yet, maybe you don't want to. Maybe you don't want to ruin your memory of this great film character. I mean, really, it's that bad. I mean, this is on par with, you know, Godzuki and what have you. I mean, this is really bad stuff. Again, there is some great special effects and stuff like that, but just as a film, very difficult to sit through. Okay, our next film, NH10. This is from 2015 out of India, directed by Navdeep Singh, who I haven't really seen anything he's done. I think he's done something called 6 Feet Under, Manorama. But nothing I've seen before, so I'm not really familiar with him. Starring Anushka Sharma, who plays Mira, who is in a film called PK Sultan, which I've heard good things about. And Neil Bupalam as Arjun. He is in there's a Bollywood version of the hit TV show 24. And he's a regular on that show. And that's pretty much what his big claim to fame was before this film. So, our tagline, as we always do, for every film is, what can one woman do against an entire village? Answer, whatever she must. So, a young married couple on holiday stumble across a rural town and witness an honor killing. Now they are targeted for death as well. We don't do a lot of Bollywood reviews here, which in a way is a shame. There are some very good stories coming from India. And I do want to try to make the show a little more broader and reviewing some of those films. Now, this one deals with honor killings. Now, honor killings are an all too real thing in India. And until recently, government kind of turned a blind eye to such things. In this case, the offense was for two people from the same caste, which is a type of social class, to get married. Now, in these type of places, it's considered almost ancestral to marry within your caste. It's some very old world shit, to be honest. And so I think maybe a lot of Westerners would see this and maybe not really understand, but just, you know, like I'm saying, it's a very old world thing. It's not supposed to marry within your group, even if it's not blood relative. They kind of expand it a little farther in this blood relative, but almost as if to say, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good way to explain this. This is not the best analogy, but I'll go with it. It's almost like you're from, I don't know, West Hollywood. You know, you're not allowed to marry anybody from West Hollywood. You know, you can marry somebody from San Diego or from the East Coast, but if you marry somebody else from West Hollywood, well, you're crazy. Doesn't matter if you're really blood related, you're both from West Hollywood. That's kind of how these places in India look at these type of things. And I think it does have to come down to, I think in a lot of ways people feel that everybody from that caste might way down the line may have some blood ties. And so that might be the reason why. Now, back to the story, which is very dark and grim. I have heard it classified as a neo-noir film, which I'm not sure I would agree, but it is something very dirty about this film. Not in a sexual way, mind you, but seeing this underbelly of India, I found a lot of Deliverance-esque inspiration coming through here as well. This story is nothing terribly innovative. In fact, it's a plot we've seen on dozens of B-films, really. What helps it stand out is having, one, such a big name in the lead in the actress Anushka Sharma, who is a huge Bollywood star. And I think that helps. While I don't think her performance was dazzling, she is solid, she has a very strong camera presence, and she brings a big fan base with her. And I think that just lent a lot to word of mouth about the film. Unfortunately, though, the rest of the cast doesn't share that quality, and it really felt they were interchangeable, with no one bringing anything remarkable to their roles. Still, the film is a good watch. It keeps your interest right up to the violent conclusion. Here we see part of the new wave of Bollywood, by the way, where the usual light-hearted, happy things really don't apply. There's no musical numbers, no dancing, you know, a lot of stuff that we're familiar when we think of Bollywood films. This film doesn't have that. And you're seeing a lot more films like this being made in the latter years. And maybe for that reason only, this is worth a watch for fans of films from this region. Like I said, it's an okay film. It's not going to blow you away. I gave it a 6 out of 10. Now, we go to our section. This is our new section, if you haven't been listening for the last couple of shows, where I can't, as you can imagine, it's impossible to watch everything when you want to. And so I like to pick a movie here that got by me. I wanted to watch it, just never got a chance to, and finally went back and watched it. So it's not really new, it's not really old, so it's kind of in between, and we're going to start reviewing one of these every show. And the one I'm reviewing this time is Rise of the Legend, 2014, a co-China-Hong Kong co-production, directed by Roy Chow, who you might know from Nightfall, the thriller. That's really the only thing I know him from. I think he did something else called Murder, but it's not a film I'm really familiar with. It's starring Eddie Peng, who plays Wong Fei-Hung. You might know Eddie from Tai Chi Zero and Tai Chi Hero. If you were with our last show, we reviewed the films Cold War Parts 1 and 2, and he played the character Joe Lee, who was the I guess you could call him one of the main antagonists in the film. Also starring Sammo Hung, who plays Master Lu, and Wang Luodan as Chun. I'm not really too familiar with her. She's done a lot of TV. My first experience of watching her. And my tagline for this film was, vengeance or righteousness. So, we get a new version of the Wong Fei Hung story here. This one shows Hung to be a bit more vicious than we have seen in the past. In fact, this entire film really was much more bloody and violent than any of the Wong Fei Hung story that I could think of off the top of my head. And you might think that's a good thing. But, in fact, this fails on a few levels. Now, let me start off with the story, which is a bit contrived, but that really isn't the worst part of it. See, I could deal with the contrivedness. It just fell flat. I see what the director, Roy Chow, was going for, and it wasn't a terrible direction in theory, but it never really connected for me. The plan for Wong Fei Hung to infiltrate the evil gang that has terrorized his town and was responsible for his father's death was a tad cliched. And once he started sabotaging the gang from within, I found it hard to believe it wasn't obvious to everyone that he was involved. But again, you know, you try to overlook some of this stuff. But I suspect the main reason for the reason I felt the way I felt about this film, and that is that I felt it was a very subpar film, was that the acting performances were not very good. I've never been a huge Eddie Pang fan. And the decision to cast him as Wong Fei Hung was a bit curious. I mean, this is a character who's been played by Jet Li and Jackie Chan and other great actors, Fu Sheng. And in hindsight, I just don't think this was a smart choice at all. He lacked the range to portray Wong as either the righteous leader or as the hot-headed Wong Fei Hung that we've seen in the past. Instead, we got a very uneven myriad of, it seems, all of his portrayals, with none of them really being believable. But Mr. Peng was not the only culprit. Wang Luodan was appealing in her Michelle Yeoh impersonation, but at points it just felt like that's what she was doing. And then Angela Baby. Now, some of you guys listening to this, I know, are big fans of Angela Baby. Look, as a man, I can admit she is one beautiful woman. And I'm sure she's gotten some of these awards that she's gotten because she's turned in great performances. But my opinion is, her role in this film at times was cringeworthy. She plays a courtesan, which is, I guess, code speak for prostitute. And I just found her performance to be really bad and unreal. But I will say Sammo Hung was quite good, which I guess really comes as no surprise. But what did surprise me was what little depth this character was given. I think when you have an actor with, you know, that type of skill set in Sammo, which I've always felt was a much better actor than he was given credit for, I really feel like you got to make use of that and give his character some layers. And they just didn't do that. It was very one-dimensional, bad guy, about much to him other than the fact that, you know, he was bad because somebody's going to be bad. Why not him? And I just found that to be a little beneath what Sammo could bring to this. Now, this is a kung fu film, so we must talk about the action sequences. Now, the very opening battle is masterfully done, using elements like rain and slow motion takes, and really was quite fun. From there, though, I felt it took a step back the rest of the way. A lot of wire work and heavy editing. Now, I realize Sammo can't go like he used to, but still expected a little more out of him in this film. Overall, there are a lot of fight scenes, and mostly done well, so this does have that going for it. You know, I really wanted to like this film, especially after the opening scene. But I just didn't. It just never connected. I kept watching the film, waiting to get invested, and I just never did. And, you know, I think it's even more frustrating when you want to, when you want to like a film, and you just, it's just not there. And it just wasn't there for me in this film. I give the film a 4 out of 10, which is one of my lowest scores I've ever given on this show. And, unfortunately, I think it deserved it. Okay. Our next film is our old school pick of the week, and this film is called Intruder, out of Hong Kong, 1978. Directed by Chang Ken-chung. Now, he was the writer for films like The Royal Warriors, God of Cookery, Kung Fu Hustle, Mermaid, which we reviewed on this show previously. But he hasn't really directed much. He's more known as a writer. Now, it's starring Jacqueline Wu Ching Lin, who plays Yan. Some call her Jacqueline Wu. Some call her Wu Ching Lin. I usually refer to her as Wu Ching Lin. You might know her from Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, which we reviewed on this. Beyond Hypothermia, which we will review in this show one day. And Moment of Romance Trilogy. You've seen the trilogy of Moment of Romance. She is the co-star of that. Also starring Wayne Lai as Chen Kai-ming, mostly known for a lot of TV dramas. He also was in the film The Detective. And Moses Chan as Quan Phi. Moses has been a supporting actor for a lot of years. One of his biggest, most well-known roles was co-star of the film The Chui Hawk Ode to the One-Armed Swordsman called The Blade, if you've seen that. If you haven't seen The Blade, by the way, we will review it at one point in the show, but trust me, you will like The Blade. Check it out. And Moses Chan was the co-star of that film. So if you've seen that, you might know who he is. And my tagline for this film is, don't let her in. So what's this about? A woman is on the run from the authorities in China and leaves bodies in her wake as she heads to Hong Kong for salvation. So I was given a chance to see this at the Mood for Gore Festival in the brand new Alamo Drafthouse Theater in Brooklyn, New York. Thanks to Grady Hendrix and the guys from Subway Cinema for, there was a little contest from the New York Asian Film Festival, which I was able to win, and I was able to get seats free to this festival. Unfortunately, because of work, I only got to see one film, and this was the one I wanted because, well, it's a Milky Way production, which of course means Johnny Toe had a hand in this. And while it wasn't directed by him, you see a lot of his influences in the film, and so I'm glad this was the one I picked to see. The overall theme of this film is very bleak and at times a bit harrowing, but hey, that is the Milky Way way. There is very little laughs, and for the most part, while not sad, it is dark and almost depressing. The lead, Wu Ching Lin, is by far the stand-up performance in this film. I'm a big fan of hers, and I quoted a couple of films she's been in, but she's not a major star for most Hong Kong film watchers. But I personally am a big fan of hers. Everything I see her in, I think she's fantastic. So, she really sells the sociopathic element of her actions in this film. She knows killing is wrong, but it's a means to an end, and therefore was done without much regret. She really makes this come out in her performance, with her mannerisms, her facial expressions, and what have you. I just think it's a very nuanced performance by her. And really, in a lot of ways, the highlight of this film is just to watch her in this performance. Now, before the film, we were told that this film was meant to display that the soon retaking of Hong Kong by China would not be as mundane as we were led to believe. And in fact, that turned out to be true, as unfortunately Hong Kong has slipped into despair post-China takeover. So Johnny Toe is apparently, you know, a lot of the thought behind this. He's one of the people who really spoke out against people thinking that, well, it's not going to be bad when China takes over. It's just going to be business as usual. And he didn't think so. And this film was kind of what he was trying to say. As you know, as you see the narrative, is that a woman is coming from mainland China into Hong Kong and laying waste to all around her. And so it's definitely a parallel to what Johnny felt was going to happen, and in many ways what did. However, while all that and all the glowing words I've talked about coming up to this point in this review, this film is by no means a classic. There is a lot wrong with this film, notably some disappointing acting from Wayne Lai and others. And while we got a good glimpse into Yan, the character played by Wu Qingyan, we didn't get that same detail to other notable characters in the film. And then at times, it felt flat and depressing, almost for the sake of being depressing. That says a lot. I've seen films that I thought were depressing and dark before, but I still felt the film was done with the hopes of being entertaining, even while maybe being depressing. I didn't get that feel from this film. I felt like this was just like, we're screwed. All you people were screwed. All is lost. I'm just going to make a film. Screw it. And you almost kind of got that feeling from this. Still, this is not a bad film to see if you could find it. It is apparently extremely difficult to find this film anywhere, although I do have a copy of it. I gave the film a 5 and a 5 out of 10. If it is something that you are having trouble finding, shoot me a message wherever you see this, or on our Facebook page, Asian Cinema Fusion, or on our Twitter page, which is AZN Cinema Fusion, at AZN Cinema Fusion on Twitter. You can go to either one of those places and send me a message if you're having trouble finding this film. As I said, for any of the films I review, if it sounds like something you really want to see and you can't get a hold of, always shoot me a message and I'll see what I can do about trying to get you guys a copy. Okay, and now we're going to head to our last review, which is our wild card review, which, if you're new to the show, is one film that I feel, now usually it will be a film that I think was really good that has slipped by people. People haven't seen it. Maybe not widely recognized film, which I think is very worth a watch. Now, we're going to kind of move away a little bit from this, because the film we're going to review today is Old Boy, out of South Korea, 2003, which, of course, is a very well-known film, directed by the great Park Chan-wook, who is known for the Vengeance trilogy, which Old Boy is part of, and, of course, the other two parts being Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. He's also done the American film Stoker, and has the hit film, which we're going to review in our next show, The Handmaiden. So Park Chan-wook, a really top-notch director. And it's starring Choi Min-sik, who plays Oh Dae-soo, who you might know from a film, The New World, great film, Shiri, I Saw the Devil. Choi Min-sik, one of the bigger names in all of South Korea. Also starring Yoo Ji-tae, who plays Lee Woo-jin, who was in the film Antarctic Journal. He was also in a film Running Wild, which I've seen, which was okay. Also starring Kang Hae-jung as Mi-do, who you might also, if you've seen Antarctic Journal, see was in that as well. Tagline for this film, the quest for answers may destroy him. So, a drunkard is imprisoned for 15 years without explanation and in some secret, you know, hideaway. Now released, he searches to learn just why. So, as I said, usually in the spot we reserve for films I think many have not seen, and this probably doesn't fall into that category. I saw this, though, on the big screen recently and decided to review it. I went to a special Park Chan-wook little mini festival they had, a little retrospective, and this played, and he was there live after the movie to act, you know, give a little Q&A session. And because I had saw it on the big screen, which I never saw on the big screen before, maybe decided I wanted to review it for maybe some of them who possibly have missed this gem. As I said earlier, this was part of the Vengeance trilogy. It was actually the second film of the Vengeance trilogy. And by far the most famous, Spike Lee recently did a Western remake of this, which failed miserably. I could go into why, but I'd rather focus my attention on this film. So what director Park does here is paint us a picture, but it's abstract. And slowly he turns the lens so that we begin to get a better idea of what we are looking at. This film is one of almost madness, which is somehow comforting. How else can you think of someone who has been locked up for 15 years with no outside contact? How would they react to this finally being released? Just released with no word, nothing. Just released without any word, not understanding, not hearing anything about why this happened to him. What was the point of all this? Nothing. Now, the character, O, played by Choi Min-sik, he's hard. He's uncouth. He was possibly all of these things prior to his jailings. But now, he has lost all semblance of social skills. And the reasoning behind why this was done pales in comparison to the extent of vengeance brought upon him. And in that is where the very controversial nature of this film comes about. The acting in this is good. It's not sublime, but it works. Choi Min-sik is fantastic. And the rest are good. But it's really about the story that's unfolding before our eyes that reels you in. As you're sitting here, you are right there with wanting to know, why? Why did you do this to this man? Why did you do this? And you're really just hooked as you're trying to unveil the mystery of why this was done. Of course, there is some action. In fact, one of the most famous scenes ever recorded in Korean cinema history is here, as Oh Dae-soo takes on a horde of gangsters with a hammer, and what was one continuous take. Now, word is it took 3 days to get that scene right, and is truly remarkable. And if you watch the film, you'll know the scene. Where he's fighting through a hallway, and all he has is a hammer against, you know, a couple of dozen bad guys. Thus, and if you watch it, a lot of people, I think, that sit by them. There was all one take. There's no cutaway during this scene. That's really amazing. Amazing piece of filmmaking. So if you have not, for some reason, seen Old Boy, I implore you to do so. Do not worry about seeing Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance first. The films are in no way related, and you can watch them in any order. But be wary of the controversial ending. But I do ask you to try not to learn of it beforehand, as I think it will ruin surprise of it. Also, the ending does leave you with a few questions. Now, Park Chan-wook has said that he's not going to define it, and leaves it for each viewer to decide for themselves. Which is very interesting, and you'll think about it when you see the film. The very end scene leaves a little bit to be interpreted. And it's, I guess, up to you to take away from it the way you feel it ended, if that's how the director wanted you to do it. I give this film an 8.5 out of 10. This can be seen in many places. I know it's on Netflix, or at least it was at some point. I'm 99% sure it's on Netflix. Also, it's very easy to get a DVD or Blu-ray of this film at a very good price. You could go on eBay. But remember, get the original Park Chan-wook South Korea film. Do not get Spike Lee remake starring James Brolin. Stay away from that. I would stay away from it either before or after seeing this film. It's just not, there's a lot of elements to the film that I don't want to give away that are left out of the Spike Lee remake and then make the film just really a shell of what the original was. Okay, that's our show. As I said, I wanted to tell you guys Asia Cinema Fusion, now on Facebook and Twitter. As I said, it is for Facebook, we're at Asian Cinema Fusion. You can just look that up, Asian Cinema Fusion, and you will find the Facebook page. At Twitter, it's at AZN Cinema Fusion. you know, just look us up, join, support, follow the show. I am right now doing a countdown of my 100 favorite Asian films. We're up to, I believe, 49 was the last one that went up. So you can go and check that out and give me comments if you agree or disagree with the list of films that are being put up there. I put a little bit about the film, a little one sentence, a synopsis, along with a director, a star, a year the film was made. So you can check that out. Also, I update guys on future podcasts, also about future releases of films, any film festivals or special screenings I hear about in my area or even other areas. I also retweet a lot of stuff from other Asian Twitter pages about Asian cinema, and I review a lot of their stuff, and I retweet it for you guys. So, I mean, I think it's a good follow. If you're really into Asian cinema, I think follow us on Twitter is a good follow, and follow us on Facebook if you're a Facebook fan, like I said. Check out the countdown, and I think you guys will enjoy all that stuff. And that's it for our show. As I said, we will be reviewing The Handmaiden on our next show. Not sure what else we're going to review yet. We'll see. As always, I try to pick the best films I think you guys want to hear about. That's what I always try to do. So tune in to us next time. And as always, I want to thank you guys for listening. And I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving as we're a day or two away from that. And until next time, bye-bye.
Not an easy skill to learn. I've been practicing it for many years.